Hello and welcome to the KO Knockout Podcast. Today we sit down with Erica Hartman, Executive Director of A Safe Place for Youth and a licensed marriage and family therapist who found her calling working in youth homeless services. Through this line of work, she's learned the root causes of homelessness and the personal stories behind them. Every child deserves a safe place to sleep. Join us as we explore the factors leading to homeless youth, obstacles to affordable housing, and successful programs designed to help these kids.
We are here because as women in business, we don't want to walk alone on our path to success. We believe that by teaching and supporting one another, we can gain the knowledge we need and build a community where we belong. We are the Knockouts, women who champion other women and see every obstacle as an opportunity. Hey, Erica, welcome to the podcast. You are an incredibly special guest. Would you kick off by just telling us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. So I am located in Los Angeles. I'm originally from Los Angeles, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I came to the world of working in homeless services initially as a therapist in a community clinic. And I really started to learn about the root causes of homelessness and the personal stories behind the experience. And, you know, subsequently continued to work in the different pipelines to homelessness, from gang intervention to child welfare, and then directly in the homeless services sector. And I'm now the executive director at Safe Place for Youth.
We came across A Safe Place for Youth as we were doing research for KO on a series where we covered affordable housing. So our audience is typically investors and mostly women, 99% women, who invest in real estate or energy or different parts of the economy. And real estate is a big area. And we sort of uncovered that there's an area within real estate called affordable housing. And we think of it from an investor standpoint. And what's the opportunity? What are the market trends? What's causing this? And that sort of led me to you because it is an interesting investment story. It's actually, I mean, there's just this human side of it, this issue that if as investors or business people, we don't think about the consequences, we sort of miss the issue and the stakes that happen when you don't have enough affordable housing. And so that's how we found you. And I just find your story so just powerful. And so your audience here are not probably your typical audience. These are a lot of women who invest in real estate and are looking for ways for their investments to have an impact. So I would love for you to address and educate us a little bit about the issue of homelessness, and this is your area of expertise. You know, tell us, start from the beginning. What are we facing here?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you noted, homelessness really is an economic issue. It is to do often with a lack of affordable housing, and in Los Angeles, in particular, the cost of housing has just continued to skyrocket. The vast majority of people spend over 90% of their income on just their rent. So any life circumstance that comes along that, you know, takes beyond that can cause people to fall immediately into homelessness. You know, and many folks don't have a nest egg socked away to rely on, you know, a rainy day fund, if you will. And in Los Angeles in particular, the cost of a one bedroom now requires an individual to make over $80,000 a year. And that's certainly not the majority of folks in Los Angeles. So I think that, you know, we start from a place where the housing market is, you know, just continues to increase. And we also see a lot of circumstances in which even with when somebody can afford the rent, the amount of income discrimination that people exist. Landlords officially can't decline housing vouchers, but they often will not rent when they know that a person is coming through a homeless services provider. And, you know, they identify other reasons for it, but, you know, we see that it's very difficult to place people in housing. So, you know, and youth are their own unique demographic. And I think one thing is, you know, if you think about homelessness as basically an emergency room, there are so many different reasons that people come into an emergency room. And that really, there really is no one size fits all solution because we have all these different pipelines. And for youth in particular, the main cause of homelessness has to do with not having a strong safety net of loving, caring adults in their lives. Over 90% of youth in Los Angeles identify the main cause of their homelessness as the lack of a strong supportive network. So, you know, and this plays out in the ways in which about 30% of youth come from the child welfare system. 40% identify as LGBTQ. And, you know, we of course see the disproportionality by race and ethnicity reflecting the systemic inequities that our society continues to experience.
You mentioned that you focus on the problem with youth. And I think that's an difficult issue for a lot of us who are parents. And I mean, it's, there's just very difficult to imagine a child that doesn't have a safe place to sleep at night. And yet that is what you're, that those are your the people that you serve. And that's very difficult for a lot of us who are so far removed to imagine. So maybe you could paint a picture of what, you know, I don't know if you could share a story of how does a child end up without a shelter? And what is that experience like for them? What are they really struggling with?
Well, I think one thing, you know, that is a pipeline is, you know, experience of trauma and, you know, the experience of trauma that causes young people to end up in the child welfare system and, you know, the difficulty, you know, once people are there. So we're really proud to have 10% of our staff are our former youth members. We also have about 30% of our staff are have formerly experienced homelessness. And at Safe Place for Youth, we serve youth who are 12 to 25 years old. So one young man who I have enormous respect for came to our organization because he had been in 37 foster placements. Mm. And at the age of 15, his foster parents said, we'll buy you a bus ticket to anywhere, but it can't be here. So with $40 in his pocket, he landed in Los Angeles and came to our organization. And that's where, you know, this network of supportive, caring adults, you know, what we are is really a community that provides that to young people, just really wrapped their arms around him and, you know, believed in him and supported him. And, you know, he eventually became one of our employees. And, you know, at 27, he was reflecting on having 10 years prior come to our organization and how far he'd come. But I think that that's an example of how through no fault of his own, he was bounced around until somebody absolutely said, no more, we're not, you know, we're stepping back from being your support system. And, you know, he just had nowhere else to go. So it's, you know, it's circumstances like that I think really, you know, tug at our heartstrings because, you know, in one way, you know, as you said, the stakes are so, so high for us that we have a really unique opportunity to move young people out quickly. And our youth identified employment as their number one need, even above housing. So I think that, you know, we have that really clear opportunity, but it takes folks being able to give dedicated attention to that so that we don't end up with people, you know, being chronically homeless for the rest of their lives.
What are some of the most successful programs and techniques that you do to help these kids?
Well, I think a lot of it is that we know that people need to increase their income if they're going to be able to afford housing in LA. And so, you know, the most clear-cut pathway for folks who maybe haven't entered the workforce, maybe have just had their first job, is to help them identify career trajectories. One of the really heartbreaking things about youth homelessness is in some of the research we've been part of, it's been determined that at 2 years, 100% of youth have either experienced criminalization or exploitation. So the clock is really ticking for us to get them into housing opportunities and employment before that happens. That's really what it is helping to you know, mentor, guide, identify the housing, help people connect to the resources, and, you know, make sure that they have the support along the way for any trauma that they may have experienced, and just making sure that we have a permanent supportive network for them.
You mentioned on something I read or in one of our conversations that one of your most successful programs was the arts. How does art help homeless kids?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that we're you know, facing when we're doing outreach to young people is, you know, we have a number of staff who are adults to help provide that nurturing adult relationship, but we also have a number of our young people who are part of our outreach teams, because what has happened is that trust with these young people has been broken. And so it is hard to repair that trust to adults. And the thing about the Healing Arts program is that it creates a space for people to be expressive, to do something they enjoy with nothing being asked of them. We're not asking them to sign up for a program. We're not asking them to get sober. And in that time, they start to build those trusting relationships. And, you know, it boosts their resiliency, but then it starts to open a door to, you know, a hard conversation about where somebody is residing and what their true needs are and what their struggles are. So, you know, I think even more than basic needs resources, sometimes young people come to our program just for the arts, just to express themselves, to be in a space with other people. And then that's really our gateway to other opportunities for them.
Erica, how can the community be more supportive of what you all are doing?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I think there's a role for everybody to play in addressing homelessness. I think as a starting point, it's so wonderful that you are creating this opportunity for people to learn about the root causes. And I think where people can, you know, educate themselves about it, you know, take it another step and educate other people, you know, be advocates for housing in everybody in your community, in my community, in everybody's community, and, you know, figure out ways in which we can support folks doing the good work in the community. So, you know, on our end, of course, where, you know, people have resources to contribute, that's enormous. We were a privately funded organization for many, many years. And so it was, you know, because of the support of the community, we also went about half of our tenure without official staff. So we were entirely volunteer run, and our volunteers are an enormous part of making our work happen, especially through our mentorship program. Most organizations need hygiene products. They need, you know, clothing, things like that, food resources, just really the gamut. And, you know, where people can be part of greater, broader community advocacy, I think we really need to bring people together around this issue. And ultimately that's what's going to solve homelessness.
How did you get you yourself? How did you find this calling?
Yeah. So I think in my role as a marriage and family therapist, I had originally thought I was going to go into private practice, and I, you know, had wanted to work on an individual basis with people. And then as I heard specifically about the causes of people's homelessness, you know, one story that stuck with me was a man who was, you know, receiving methadone treatment and trying to come off of heroin. And he was 72 years old, and he'd been using heroin since he was 12, when he'd gone over the handlebars of his bike and had been injured and not had access to pain medication. And I think that, you know, hearing about how that had impacted his life, that circumstance, and how it had affected his ability to hold a job, to remain stably housed, really made me think about, you know, that there is a person, personal story, suffering that has gone into homelessness. And so in starting to have that personal perspective on it, I, you know, began to work in these different pipelines that were causing homelessness. And I was commuting across Los Angeles and started to see just the spread of homelessness. It started with a couple on-ramps, off-ramps, underpasses, and then it pretty much became just about every single one. And it felt like I had seen it spread across the city. And it was just starting to keep me up at night. I couldn't continue to see so much human suffering and not be part of the solution. And so that's when I made the decision to work directly in homeless services and took a position as the chief program officer of a women's homeless services organization on Skid Row. And I absolutely loved working at that organization, and it was incredible to see the survivors who were coming through our programs. But I think what I started to really focus on, and what was wearing on me, is that I felt like we are to a point where if we don't cut off the pipelines to homelessness, if we don't move people out quickly, we're never going to get ahead of it. And so when the opportunity to work with youth and this capacity presented itself, it really felt like my calling, you know, to be a part of moving people out of homelessness quickly. And, you know, youth are so inspiring. They're so resilient. And it's just, you know, keeps me inspired and motivated every day.
Is it hard to measure progress or success. I mean, when you have homelessness growing and it's all around you and it's overwhelming, obviously you're doing great work and there are amazing stories that come out of it, but I'm sure there's also an overwhelm that comes with that as well, because it's such a huge problem. How do you balance that and make, I don't know, does that ever get you down? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It does take, you know, some structuring and making sure that you have time to give yourself bandwidth for the hard work. But, you know, the way homelessness is in Los Angeles, you can't go anywhere and not see it at this point. And so I think that, you know, what brought me to the work was that feeling of overwhelm, and that somehow it's less overwhelming to be part of the solution. And people often will say, you know, do you think you can really end homelessness? And I think the thing is that, you know, the state of homelessness is one aspect to it, but the stakes are so high for an individual that, you know, a success is an individual who we are able to connect to a resource, who we are able to connect to a pathway. So incredible when, you know, we see people get housed. Two of our programs are for pregnant and parenting families, and a huge predictor of homelessness is when people have experienced homelessness as a child. And so just in the last couple of months, we've had two new babies born into, you know, housed families. And so I think that, you know, it's really incredible to feel like, you know, that's a success, that we've, you know, prevented another generation of homelessness potentially. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot to be done, and we absolutely have to focus on, you know, the issue as a whole, and also every single success, you know, helps sustain you in the work.
Yeah. Every individual matters. I think also I find this with the KO conference series. I mean, it's a completely different demographic who in a lot of ways are very, privileged and advantaged, you know, our demographic, but at the same time, we're all just humans. And the sometimes women who are in leadership positions like yourself have struggles and can feel alone on their path. And I hear feedback that it's just nice knowing that there's someone out there thinking about them and fighting for them and that they can go there. And I'm sure it's just inspiring for these kids to know that you exist for them. And, you know, you're thinking about them all the time. I can't imagine what a relief it is to, if they've been bounced around, to just know that there's one place that exists purely to think about them and how to make their lives better.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely what we're striving to do. And I think that that's, you know, our name speaks to that, in our mission. And I think that, you know, for me, you know, as a woman, having people that believed in me, having people that were, you know, telling me that I could achieve more than I knew myself that I could, that I think that was enormous. And I think that that's specifically what these young people don't have and need and deserve. And, you know, a lot of it is about, you know, your belief in yourself. And so I think that it's very hard to hold that when you're getting lots of negative messages about yourself. And so I think that, you know, it is a similar parallel in that way. And it's, you know, the goal is to be able to give back for, you know, what I think has been helpful for me personally.
Erica, what's the mantra that guides you personally?
I think that reminding myself that, you know, even when you feel powerless, that you're not, that you're powerful, and that you can, you know, dig deep and find that strength for other people. And I think that that helps motivate me to be able to just tell myself, you know, you can do this, you know, and somebody has to do this, and you have, you know, the drive and the heart for it and the stomach for it. And I think that those successes that we have, you know, really sustain me along the way. So I think it is that, you know, belief in our ability to make an impact. You know, however, you know, small or great that it is, to change somebody's life or to change the trajectory of their life. I think that's sort of what I keep in the back of my mind about the work that we're doing.
Well, I think it's really heroic. I think there's a lot of us that read headlines and say, gosh, that sounds really challenging, but there you are rolling up your sleeves and dedicating your entire career to actually making a difference. And that probably sounds kind of, you know, cliche, but truly, I mean, there's a lot of, you're a very talented person. There's probably a lot of different things you could do. And I just think it's amazing that a safe place for youth exists, and it's doing such great work. It gives a hopeful message. So thanks so much for coming on and telling your story.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Well, if you're listening out there and you're a real estate investor or you're interested in solving affordable housing, I hope that this is a story that gives you some inspiration. Maybe there's something we can all do in our own communities to be supportive of affordable housing and think differently about the impact that it can make. So Erica, thank you. And we wish you all the best of luck in your great work.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation with Erica Hartman, who believes we all have the ability to make an impact, to inspire, and to better our communities. If you'd like to learn more about her mission, please click on the link in the show notes.